New arrivals from the U.S.'s southern border continue to come to Chicago, and as their numbers grow, so do all the criticisms and warnings about spending too much taxpayer money on caring for and helping migrants. But some new research suggests health coverage actually provides benefits for the state. And how and why? Well, we're going to ask. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. A new study by the Great Cities Institute at the University of Illinois Chicago shows that publicly funded health care for the uninsured, regardless of immigration status, pays for itself and benefits more than the patients. Obviously, this has bearing on the current migrant crisis, and it raises questions. Well, we're going to handle some of those questions during this half hour. Joining me are Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute, Ere Rendon, Vice President for Immigration or Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, who is an organizer with the Chicago Teachers Union and a community activist in the areas of health care and immigrant rights. She's also the Democratic candidate for the state Senate in the 20th District. She defeated incumbent Natalie Toro in the primary. Yeah, you'll recall that was the race we were talking about on election night. I thank the three of you for joining me. Matt Wilson, you did the work on this study. Talk to us about the top line funding. Having the government pay for health care for people without insurance is worth it? Well, how and why?
Thanks so much for having me. And so this was a report that was commissioned by the Healthy Illinois campaign. And we did a number of things in this study looking at the costs and what the costs are of two programs that have paused enrollment, including the health benefits for immigrants adults and the health benefits for immigrant seniors. So one thing we did was we contextualized that within the state's healthcare spending and the state's overall budget. And actually, those two programs had an expenditure that was 0.6% of the state's budget and 1.6% of all healthcare expenditure. So pretty small in the context of the larger budgets. And what we did in this report was we sort of asked this question of, well, how could we think about the benefits of providing healthcare for individuals, their communities, their families, and society at large? And we have in recent years a lot of evidence from ACA expansions of Medicaid to know what are the benefits. So we've observed a lot of benefits of expanded coverage. And when we extrapolate them to immigrant populations, we find that there's a lot of different benefits. So I think the top line sort of benefits that we find is that it makes people more productive and it makes them, it enhances their ability to work. It doesn't just help the parents in a household that receive coverage. It also helps their children. Their children are more likely to enroll themselves in health coverage. But mostly what it does is increasing the insurance rates, it gives people the needed care they need. They don't have to postpone care. They can prevent hospital admissions for preventable sicknesses and diseases. And it really improves a lot of health outcomes. So we know that people are getting more preventative care and not ending up in hospitals. So there's a lot of different sort of beneficiaries, and it goes far beyond the individual that's just getting coverage.
Ere Rendon, you're with your work with the Resurrection Project. Why is it important for people to hear these kinds of things? What difference does it make in your work?
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Craig, for having us and for this discussion. And I do want to highlight that this is more broad than thinking about only new arrivals or migrants. As you mentioned at the top, this is really about folks who have been in the country for decades and have been paying into the system, paying taxes, but have not been able to receive benefits. Healthcare benefits for immigrant seniors was the first in the nation, first time that we were able to have undocumented seniors who have been living here for decades and paying into the system without any ability to participate in healthcare prior to this win. Two of those folks are my parents, my mom and my dad, who have been in the country for now 34 years, who have always worked two jobs, And who have always paid taxes, filing their taxes with what's called an ITIN number, because undocumented immigrants, we may not receive a work permit, we may not receive a social security number, but we do receive what's called an individual tax ID number so that we can file our taxes. My parents are homeowners, business owners. They have three adult children who they put through college. And so for us, it's incredibly important. And I think that this report does a great job of demonstrating the impact of wider than just the immigrants who received the benefits themselves. And from my own personal story, I know how impactful it is that my mom and my dad have healthcare so that they can stay healthy and stay active and working. But then also what it means for me as an adult who also works, who also, you know, participates in every sector to be able to make sure that my parents are taken care of and it doesn't become an additional burden on me. So for us, it's an intergenerational wealth protection for undocumented immigrants and for the children of undocumented immigrants, who many are U.S. born and who need to make sure that as our parents age, that they can continue to stay healthy. And what we're working on now, right, is making sure that the younger population is able to participate through healthcare benefits for immigrant adults.
That's good to know. And we're going to come back to some of these, the things that have been touched on. But Graciela Guzman, especially for someone who hopes to be part of the state legislature, what are the policy implications here? Because we're talking about care that keeps being debated on the in the Illinois House and Senate.
I mean, I think I'll remind us, right, our state has been in a long-term arc around how we can approach healthcare for all people, right? It wasn't so long ago that we were debating all kids, the state's health insurance program for all low-income children, regardless of immigration status, the conversations that emerged during the pandemic to make sure that Black and Brown lives and undocumented and other folks subject to the five-year waiting period could actually obtain health insurance coverage, help stave off what could have been catastrophic deaths across our state, right? And so I also say that knowing that there's been an incredible package that's starting to take a look at prior authorizations and other ways that we can bolster our health insurance program broadly across the state. And I think the overarching message here is we have a glaring disparity in terms of coverage. Folks that are undocumented or subject to the five-year waiting period constitute almost 34.8% of our state's uninsured. Compare that to folks that are citizens, that's 7%. So that's a really glaring disparity that when we think about our core mission in terms of services that we provide for our state, not just in terms of compassionate, dignified care, but care that actually makes sense, that helps bolster our labor institutions, that helps make sure that folks are healthy and thriving, that makes sure that our students, that our children are actually part of a cohesive unit where the people around them that take care of them are healthy and well. This is important. And I think what the report actually helps do is directly address some of the biggest sources of misinformation, right? The perception that this is a bigger portion of the budget than what it actually is. Two, the return on investment, as Eddie mentioned, of the thousands of people in our state that are contributing towards the system and not able to get the healthcare that they need. Thirdly, that we have this population that needs desperate health insurance coverage all throughout the state. This is not a Chicago problem. This is not a Cook County problem. This is not a Chicagoland problem. We have these populations all throughout our state, and we have a very direct way by expanding the HBIA and HBIS program to be able to address the uncompensated care problems that exist all throughout the state. And it's really a win-win. We pour back into our community by strengthening this program. We're able to address what providers need in terms of uncompensated care. And more importantly, we're contributing towards a state-based system that makes sure that every single Illinoisan, regardless of their immigration health insurance coverage, has what they need.
And we do have to keep stressing that this is not just migrants. This is also people who have been in this country for some time. Matt Wilson, I want to ask you about one part of this, though. Healthcare is expensive. I mean, some studies have shown the costs still rising faster than inflation. How does that figure in to the calculations, if you want to say, of what makes it worth it? I mean, does the rising cost and how those sometimes seem uncontrolled end up in some ways diminishing the benefits of the analysis?
Yeah, so I think in isolation, HBI and HBIS, even given the current costs, I think make a lot of sense financially. But I think we ought to also look at rising costs and what the costs are and how to get those down. And I think that, you know, if healthcare can become cheaper, that benefits everyone. So it's not, I think it's not just looking at these programs in sort of isolation in a state of rising healthcare costs, but also trying to address those too. But I think, you know, sticking to the finances of it, you know, there's so many financial benefits that accrue to households when people can afford prescriptions and they don't have to delay care. They don't have problems paying their medical bills. They're not going into medical debt. They're not having to rely on uncompensated care. And I think that if we take a more holistic approach and try to think about how we can look at other types of injustices within the medical care industry, that we can sort of simultaneously try to address both.
Aren't some immigrants able to be covered by health insurance? I mean, and I'm still, I guess we're mostly talking undocumented, but that may be expanded, but aren't some people actually eligible to be covered, Ere?
Well, there's a population, the population that is excluded from any sort of, any sort of coverage are the entire undocumented population. And so that's folks that don't have any sort of visa, but also in many circumstances, folks like me who have DACA, and also legal permanent residents under 5 years are all excluded from all sorts of types of coverage. But there's specifically for Medicare and Medicaid, we're completely excluded from those two programs. I also want to highlight that the requirements for the income requirements for HBIA and HBIS mimic those of the income requirements for U.S. citizens for the Medicaid program. So we worked really hard in Healthy Illinois to make sure that we looked at this from an equity perspective and saying we haven't asked for anything anything more generous or anything special for the undocumented population and the legal permanent residents under 5 years who can participate in HBIA and HBIS. So it's folks that are generally completely shut out of the Medicaid system or the Medicare system, and that's who is enrolling into HBIA and HBIS.
Are the uninsured getting the right information, getting enough information about what's available? How are people even knowing that it's possible for them to get this kind of health care? Either Ere or Graciela, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, I actually think the fragmentation of the system, the fact that we have a variety of programs, right, that meet different income levels, different immigration statuses, the fact that we have a private health insurance market, the federal marketplaces, right, it's a really convoluted, difficult world. And we need in-person assistance. And I think we've seen a general reduction about funding for that in the state of Illinois since an onset of the Affordable Care Act, when there were funding lines that helped fund certified application counselors and navigators all throughout our state. So I think just to say that it is a group mission to make sure that every single person in our community understands these programs and can apply. That is generally like a very difficult part of, and that it's a substantial barrier to entry for most folks in terms of health insurance coverage. But even just spouting off that sentence, the general person isn't going to say, this is my income level, this is my immigration status, now let me look at the tree and this means what I have to do, right? So I think overarchingly, what one of the side effects of this work that I hope we can achieve is actually how we simplify the system for so many folks. They don't have time, they don't have energy, they're leading very difficult lives, and that regardless of your income, right? You have to go to work, you're taking care of children, all kinds of things. And we know healthcare is important and first most. And so how we can really think about streamlining a program where regardless of your conditions, you can have access to quality, affordable health insurance should be the goal of what we're seeking to do. And we shouldn't be putting that onus on our consumers and our community members to have to achieve alone.
You are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about health care for immigrants, and my guests are Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute, Eden Dunn, Vice President for Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, who's an organizer with the CTU and a community activist. I want to talk a little bit more broadly about the way things are perceived and how you combat the perception. I'll tell you, as someone who I'm recording at least my portion of this from City Hall, and at almost every Chicago City Council meeting at the beginning where they have the public comment section, some people use their 3 minutes to complain that migrants are getting benefits that longtime residents in the neighborhoods and long-term homeless are unable to get. And it continues to seem as if, or at least the idea is that one group is pitted against another. And how does that get dealt with? And in fact, how can the kinds of findings that are in the study help in that? Matt, do you want to tackle that first? Because, I mean, are there things in this that can change people's minds?
I think there's a few things. I think, you know, one thing we try to point out is the employment rate for citizens and non-citizens in Illinois. And actually, non-citizens are working at a slightly higher rate. So there's, I think, you know, trying to address some of the concerns about, you know, what is sort of the profile of a non-citizen or an immigrant is something that we try to do a little bit of in this report. But I think, you know, one thing we wanted to point out is working at very high rates being very important parts to the Chicago and Illinois economies. And really I think what someone could take out of this is it doesn't take away from them if other people are benefiting in things that is helping, you know, this city and the state at large. You know, there's one point that we point to in the report is that 83.5% of people in Ohio who got received Medicaid expansion via the ACA said it made it easier for them to work. And I think that type of, you know, stat just enabling someone to work, I think, yeah, we see it as it's benefiting that individual, but the benefits to kind of having a more productive economy at large, I think we ought to see it as helping everyone. And if we can expand these benefits so that everyone has access to them and we're creating parity, right? It's not more, it's not additional coverage. It's actually just parity with federal Medicaid. I think it's hard to see that as not something that benefits us all, even when we're not individually a beneficiary.
Graciela Guzman, I want to ask you again, looking at the state level, especially, what are the kinds of arguments that you can make to get the state to expand the coverage? And because we're talking more money at a time when, frankly, there are a lot of people pushing for spending less money on these things.
For sure. I think of two pockets. I think related to Matt's previous point, right? I think was actually exciting to read from a place of thinking about future arguments was generally when we think about the roles that our non-citizen population is serving in terms of the employment that they are filling, they're filling unmet labor needs that are not only unfilled, obviously, but also really dangerous for health. So not only are these roles that are really, really difficult to fill, but the fact that these populations are stepping up and doing that work are actually putting them in situations of harm's way and situations where they not only lack the health insurance that they need to do their job and to continue doing it, but are doing great service to the state of Illinois. So things like waste management, construction, manufacturing, right? So when we think about why our economy and tax base is comprised, it's being done on the labor of folks that right now don't have health insurance. And when we think about what the return on investment could be, it's continuing to strengthen this labor workforce, but also expanding our tax base through this work, right? So I think the return on investment actually seems really, really efficient when we take a look at what we can do to make sure that this population can continue to do the work and service that it's doing across our state, that they're doing it in a healthy way that minimizes disruption and uncompensation compensated care across our state. And more importantly, that it can give us stability. I think one of the things that I experienced as a community advocate that was pushing for the Affordable Care Act, I remember providers and all kinds of folks at the very beginning of the Affordable Care Act saying, it's so expensive. Where are all, these are all the folks that haven't seen a provider in such a long time. So prescription costs, visit costs were all at all kinds of disproportionate levels, right? But it leveled out as folks had the opportunity to seek consistent care, manage chronic conditions, establish relationships with physicians and other really important tools in the medical network. And HBIA and HBIS is a relatively new program in our state's history. And the fact that we are gearing it up with all kinds of disruptions actually is impeding our state's journey to be able to build that longitudinal stability. So the best thing that we can do, in my eyes, is to continue strengthening HBIA and HBIS to restore the program to its fast past funding levels.
Eddie Rendon, let me turn to you for a second, because you touched on this in your opening remarks, that your parents pay taxes. They are business owners, but I'm sure you hear in your work complaints from people who say, we're paying for people who don't really contribute to society. Obviously, there are other things, but how frustrating is that? And how do you, because let's face it, we're talking about people who are complaining because they have a lack in their lives or in their communities. How do you deal with that, where people are making those kinds of, they're feeling that, even if the perception may be wrong, that is how things look to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we understand. There's larger forces and larger frustrations that exist in terms of, like we mentioned, the cost of healthcare generally, the inability for folks to be able to purchase insurance, or maybe they're in, you know, higher level of income and don't qualify for Medicaid. And so it seems very unfair that some folks would get HBIA or HBIS. But, you know, like it's difficult because you're comparing apples to oranges. It's a challenge that we have to face. I don't think that anybody can point to a single credible economic study that demonstrates that immigrants actually cost more than what they are able to contribute. And so it's not necessarily based on facts. So we can share all the facts of the world out there, but I actually think that what's the most powerful is stories, is when we're able to share the stories of my mom and dad who got here in 1990, bought a house in 1993, put me through school, and what they've been able to contribute as members of their church, as members of their community, and knowing that they are going to retire without Social Security, without any retirement plans. And, you know, when folks are able to meet one-on-one and hear these stories and put a face to, you know, what can be easily, you know, villainized, I think that that is much more powerful. We need to do reports. We need to show our facts. We need to demonstrate the contributions that we make, and we need to build really strong relationships, both within the community, but also with folks that have the ability to make these decisions, with elected officials, with folks in, you know, state government and city government, so that they can understand the contributions that immigrants do make.
Graciela Guzman, especially because of your background as an organizer, I sometimes wonder if there shouldn't be some way where the people who are in the neighborhoods where there's been disinvestment, where health care has been lacking, couldn't be arm in arm with people in the immigrant community saying, you know what, they're right, it's bad here, and make theirs better and give us some too, as opposed to having it seem like there are two different communities fighting over the same crumbs.
I think that sentiment is right on, Craig. You know, I think a lot of folks get fixated on this like very specific piece of the arc for Healthy Illinois. And we actually, like, our North Star and how we redraw is a better healthcare system for all people. And that does include folks that are citizens, many of the folks that you've been talking about that have been historically disenfranchised by lack of healthcare, healthcare inadequacy. You know, we've heard from folks all across our state that talk about healthcare providers that unfortunately have had to close and leave, for example, areas of their life where they're subject to health insurance churn, where a medical emergency that has been caused by leaving a job or making a life change or something like that means that those health decisions are now in extreme peril. And I think there is something about shared solidarity and experience that has to be centered in terms of how we're all collectively pushing towards advancing a healthcare agenda that means we simplify the healthcare system that every single person can have, and that we're starting to address things like the underinsured, folks that are uninsured despite every single option that's available here at the state and federal level. And that also means for us, right, we're obviously advancing a line of health insurance coverage for folks that right now don't have any insurance whatsoever, but the larger mission is how we bring parity to all people.
Matt Wilson, I want to ask, in going through all of the findings in your report, was there anything that you found that surprised you?
Oh, a lot of things that surprised me, actually. I think that the one thing that is really tricky methodologically when conducting this type of research is trying to put dollar signs on everything. And we can put a lot of dollar signs in terms of, you know, additional people that find it easier to work and people that aren't going into debt. But it's a lot harder to put dollar signs on things that we know are very valuable, such as, I mean, how do you put a dollar sign on the children of whose parents are who don't have coverage and are sick of them worrying at school and not being able to achieve their most? And then that hurts their lifetime earnings and their educational trajectory. And I think we were able to quantify a lot of things because there is a lot of research around specifically Medicare expansion with the ACA. But there's so many, I think, avenues and important things to research that are more of those indirect benefits that we don't think about as much. So thinking of, you know, the number of people that could become high achieving, you know, important parts of our economy that because they're the children of people who are not who don't have health coverage, you know, that thing becomes really hard to quantify. So I think, you know, what surprised me the most is that we don't have a great idea of some of these indirect impacts that are happening to people. But the ones that we do know that are directly attributable to healthcare expansion, I think, make really compelling cases. I think ones around household finances and the ability to not go into medical debt were really powerful. But I also think, you know, people's ability to, there was a 8 percentage point reduction in people who had absenteeism at work. You know, that's a really powerful one because it's not just, you know, that 8% reduction could also be someone losing their job, right? So I think that there's, it's just from every single angle, there's so many connections between healthcare and other facets of life that become really important.
Well, thank you very much. I think that that is a good way to cap off this discussion. That was Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute. I also do want to thank Ere Rendon, Vice President for Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, the organizer with CTU and a community advocate. All three of you, thank you for the discussion. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. New arrivals from the U.S.'s southern border continue to come to Chicago, and as their numbers grow, so do all the criticisms and warnings about spending too much taxpayer money on caring for and helping migrants. But some new research suggests health coverage actually provides benefits for the state. And how and why? Well, we're going to ask. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. A new study by the Great Cities Institute at the University of Illinois Chicago shows that publicly funded health care for the uninsured, regardless of immigration status, pays for itself and benefits more than the patients. Obviously, this has bearing on the current migrant crisis, and it raises questions. Well, we're going to handle some of those questions during this half hour. Joining me are Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute, Ere Rendon, Vice President for Immigration or Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, who is an organizer with the Chicago Teachers Union and a community activist in the areas of health care and immigrant rights. She's also the Democratic candidate for the state Senate in the 20th District. She defeated incumbent Natalie Toro in the primary. Yeah, you'll recall that was the race we were talking about on election night. I thank the three of you for joining me. Matt Wilson, you did the work on this study. Talk to us about the top line funding. Having the government pay for health care for people without insurance is worth it? Well, how and why?
Thanks so much for having me. And so this was a report that was commissioned by the Healthy Illinois campaign. And we did a number of things in this study looking at the costs and what the costs are of two programs that have paused enrollment, including the health benefits for immigrants adults and the health benefits for immigrant seniors. So one thing we did was we contextualized that within the state's healthcare spending and the state's overall budget. And actually, those two programs had an expenditure that was 0.6% of the state's budget and 1.6% of all healthcare expenditure. So pretty small in the context of the larger budgets. And what we did in this report was we sort of asked this question of how could we think about the benefits of providing healthcare for individuals, their communities, their families, and society at large. And we have in recent years a lot of evidence from ACA expansions of Medicaid to know what are the benefits. So we've observed a lot of benefits of expanded coverage. And when we extrapolate them to immigrant populations, we find that there's a lot of different benefits. So I think the top line sort of benefits that we find is that it makes people more productive and it makes them, it enhances their ability to work. It doesn't just help the parents in a household that receive coverage. It also helps their children. Their children are more likely to enroll themselves in health coverage. But mostly what it does is it increasing the insurance rates, it gives people the needed care they need. They don't have to postpone care. They can prevent hospital admissions for preventable sicknesses and diseases, and it really improves a lot of health outcomes. So we know that people are getting more preventative care and not ending up in hospitals. So there's a lot of different sort of beneficiaries, and it goes far beyond the individual that's just getting coverage.
Ere Rendon, your work with the Resurrection Project, why is it important for people to hear these kinds of things? What difference does it make in your work?
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Craig, for having us and for this discussion. And I do want to highlight that this is more broad than thinking about only new arrivals or migrants. As you mentioned at the top, this is really about folks who have been in the country for decades and have been paying into the system, paying taxes, but have not been able to receive benefits. Healthcare benefits for immigrant seniors was the first in the nation, first time that we were able to have undocumented seniors who have been living here for decades and paying into the system without any ability to participate in healthcare prior to this win. Two of those folks are my parents, my mom and my dad, who have been in the country for now 34 years, who have always worked two jobs and who have always paid taxes, filing their taxes with what's called an ITIN number, because undocumented immigrants, we may not receive a work permit, we may not receive a Social Security number, but we do receive what's called an individual tax ID number so that we can file our taxes. My parents are homeowners, business owners. They have three adult children who they put through college. And so for us, it's incredibly important. And I think that this report does a great job of demonstrating the impact of wider than just the immigrants who received the benefits themselves, And from my own personal story, I know how impactful it is that my mom and my dad have healthcare so that they can stay healthy and stay active and working, but then also what it means for me as an adult who also works, who also, you know, participates in every sector to be able to make sure that my parents are taken care of and it doesn't become an additional burden on me. So for us, it's an intergenerational wealth protection for undocumented immigrants and for the children of undocumented immigrants, who many are U.S. born and who need to make sure that as our parents age, that they can continue to stay healthy. And what we're working on now, right, is making sure that the younger population is able to participate through healthcare benefits for immigrant adults.
That's good to know. And we're going to come back to some of these, the things that have been touched on. But Graciela Guzman, especially for someone who hopes to be part of the state legislature, what are the policy implications here? Because we're talking about care that keeps being debated on the in the Illinois House and Senate.
I mean, I think I'll remind us, right, our state has been in a long-term arc around how we can approach healthcare for all people, right? It wasn't so long ago that we were debating all kids, the state's health insurance program for all low-income children, regardless of immigration status, the conversations that emerged during the pandemic to make sure that Black and Brown lives and undocumented and other folks subject to the five-year waiting period could actually obtain health insurance coverage, help stave off what could have been catastrophic deaths across our state, right? And so I also say that knowing that there's been an incredible package that's starting to take a look at prior authorizations and other ways that we can bolster our health insurance program broadly across the state. And I think the overarching message here is we have a glaring disparity in terms of coverage. Folks that are undocumented or subject to the five-year waiting period constitute almost 34.8% of our state's uninsured. Compare that to folks that are citizens, that's 7%. So that's a really glaring disparity that when we think about our core mission in terms of services that we provide for our state, not just in terms of compassionate, dignified care, but care that actually makes sense, that helps bolster our labor institutions, that helps make sure that folks are healthy and thriving, that makes sure that our students, that our children are actually part of a cohesive unit where the people around them that take care of them are healthy and well. This is important. And I think what the report actually helps do is directly address some of the biggest sources of misinformation, right? The perception that this is a bigger portion of the budget than what it actually is. Two, the return on investment, as Eddie mentioned, of the thousands of people in our state that are contributing towards the system and not able to get the healthcare that they need. Thirdly, that we have this population that needs desperate health insurance coverage all throughout the state. This is not a Chicago problem. This is not a Cook County problem. This is not a Chicagoland problem. We have these populations all throughout our state, and we have a very direct way by expanding the HBIA and HBIS program to be able to address the uncompensated care problems that exist all throughout the state. And it's really a win-win. We pour back into our community by strengthening this program. We're able to address what providers need in terms of uncompensated care. And more importantly, we're contributing towards a state-based system that makes sure that every single Illinoisan, regardless of their immigration health insurance coverage, has what they need.
And we do have to keep stressing that this is not just migrants. This is also people who have been in this country for some time. Matt Wilson, I want to ask you about one part of this, though. Healthcare is expensive. I mean, some studies have shown the costs still rising faster than inflation. How does that figure in to the calculations, if you want to say, of what makes it worth it? I mean, does the rising cost and how those sometimes seem uncontrolled end up in some ways diminishing the benefits of the analysis?
Yeah, so I think in isolation, HBI and HBIS, even given the current costs, I think make a lot of sense financially. But I think we ought to also look at rising costs and what the costs are and how to get those down. And I think that, you know, if healthcare can become cheaper, that benefits everyone. So it's not, I think it's not just looking at these programs in sort of isolation and in a state of rising healthcare costs, but also trying to address those too. But I think, you know, sticking to the finances of it, you know, there's so many financial benefits that accrue to households when people can afford prescriptions and they don't have to delay care. They don't have problems paying their medical bills. They're not going into medical debt. They're not having to rely on uncompensated care. And I think that if we take a more holistic approach and try to think about how we can look at other types of injustices within the medical care industry, that we can sort of simultaneously try to address both.
Aren't some immigrants able to be covered by health insurance? I mean, and I'm still, I guess we're mostly talking undocumented, but that may be expanded, but aren't some people actually eligible to be covered, Ere?
Well, there's a population, the population that is excluded from any sort of coverage are the entire undocumented population. And so that's folks that don't have any sort of visa, but also in many circumstances, folks like me who have DACA, and also legal permanent residents under 5 years are all excluded from all sorts of types of coverage. But there's specifically for Medicare and Medicaid, we're completely excluded from those two programs. I also want to highlight that the requirements for the income requirements for HBIA and HBIS mimic those of the income requirements for U.S. citizens for the Medicaid program. So we worked really hard in Healthy Illinois to make sure that we looked at this from an equity perspective and saying we haven't asked for anything more generous or anything special for the undocumented population and the legal permanent residents under 5 years who can participate in HBIA and HBIS. So it's folks that are generally completely shut out of the Medicaid system or the Medicare system, and that's who is enrolling into HBIA and HBIS.
Are the uninsured getting the right information, getting enough information about what's available? How are people even knowing that it's possible for them to get this kind of health care? Either Ere or Graciela, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, I actually think the fragmentation of the system, the fact that we have a variety of programs, right, that meet different income levels, different immigration statuses, the fact that we have a private health insurance market, the federal marketplaces, right, it's a really convoluted, difficult world. And we need in-person assistance. And I think we've seen a general reduction about funding for that in the state of Illinois since an onset of the Affordable Care Act, when there were funding lines that helped fund certified application counselors and navigators all throughout our state. So I think just to say that it is a group mission to make sure that every single person in our community understands these programs and can apply. That is generally like a very difficult part of, and that it's a substantial barrier to entry for most folks in terms of health insurance coverage. But even just spouting off that sentence, the general person isn't going to say, this is my income level, this is my immigration status, now let me look at the tree and this means what I have to do, right? So I think overarchingly, what one of the side effects of this work that I hope we can achieve is actually how we simplify the system for so many folks. They don't have time, they don't have energy, they're leading very difficult lives, and that regardless of your income, right? You have to go to work, you're taking care of children, all kinds of things. And we know healthcare is important and first most. And so how we can really think about streamlining a program where regardless of your conditions, you can have access to quality, affordable health insurance should be the goal of what we're seeking to do. And we shouldn't be putting that onus on our consumers and our community members to have to achieve alone.
You are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about health care for immigrants, and my guests are Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute, Ere Dunn, Vice President for Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, who's an organizer with the CTU and a community activist. I want to talk a little bit more broadly about the way things are perceived, and how you combat the perception. I'll tell you, as someone who I'm recording at least my portion of this from City Hall, and at almost every Chicago City Council meeting, at the beginning where they have the public comment section, some people use their 3 minutes to complain that migrants are getting benefits that longtime residents in the neighborhoods and long-term homeless are unable to get. And it continues to seem as if, or at least the idea is that one group is pitted against another. And how does that get dealt with? And in fact, how can the kinds of findings that are in the study help in that? Matt, do you want to tackle that first? Because, I mean, are there things in this that can change people's minds?
I think there's a few things. I think, you know, one thing we tried to point out is the employment rate for citizens and non-citizens in Illinois. And actually, non-citizens are working at a slightly higher rate. So there's, I think, you know, trying to address some of the concerns about, you know, what is sort of the profile of a non-citizen or an immigrant is something that we try to do a little bit of in this report. But I think, you know, one thing we wanted to point out is working at very high rates being very important parts to the Chicago and Illinois economies. And really, I think what someone could take out of this is it doesn't take away from them if other people are benefiting in things that is helping, you know, this city and the state at large. You know, there's one point that we point to in the report is that 83.5% of people in Ohio who got received Medicaid expansion via the ACA said it made it easier for them to work. And I think that type of, you know, stat just enabling someone to work, I think, yeah, we see it as it's benefiting that individual, but the benefits to kind of having a more productive economy at large, I think we ought to see it as helping everyone. And if we can expand these benefits so that everyone has access to them and we're creating parity, right? It's not more, it's not additional coverage. It's actually just parity with federal Medicaid. I think it's hard to see that as not something that benefits us all, even when we're not individually a beneficiary.
Graciela Guzman, I want to ask you again, looking at the state level especially, what are the kinds of arguments that you can make to get the state to expand the coverage? And because we're talking more money at a time when, frankly, there are a lot of people pushing for spending less money on these things.
For sure. I think of two pockets. I think related to Matt's previous point, right? I think was actually exciting to read from a place of thinking about future arguments was generally when we think about the roles that our non-citizen population is serving in terms of the employment that they are filling, they're filling unmet labor needs that are not only unfilled, obviously, but also really dangerous for health. So not only are these roles that are really, really difficult to fill, but the fact that these populations are stepping up and doing that work are actually putting them in situations of harm's way and situations where they not only lack the health insurance that they need to do their job and to continue doing it, but are doing great service to the state of Illinois. So things like waste management, construction, manufacturing, right? So when we think about why our economy and tax base is comprised, it's being done on the labor of folks that right now don't have health insurance. And when we think about what the return on investment could be, it's continuing to strengthen this labor workforce, but also expanding our tax base through this work, right? So I think the return on investment actually seems really, really efficient when we take a look at what we can do to make sure that this population can continue to do the work and service that it's doing across our state, that they're doing it in a healthy way that minimizes disruption and uncompensated care across our state. And more importantly, that it can give us stability. I think one of the things that I experienced as a community advocate that was pushing for the Affordable Care Act, I remember providers and all kinds of folks at the very beginning of the Affordable Care Act saying, it's so expensive. These are all the folks that haven't seen a provider in such a long time. So prescription costs, visit costs were all at all kinds of disproportionate levels, right? But it leveled out as folks had the opportunity to seek consistent consistent care, manage chronic conditions, establish relationships with physicians and other really important tools in the medical network. And HBIA and HBIS is a relatively new program in our state's history. And the fact that we are gearing it up with all kinds of disruptions actually is impeding our state's journey to be able to build that longitudinal stability. So the best thing that we can do, in my eyes, is to continue strengthening HBIA and HBIS to restore the program to its fast past funding levels.
Eddie Rendon, let me turn to you for a second, because you touched on this in your opening remarks, that your parents pay taxes. They are business owners, but I'm sure you hear in your work complaints from people who say, we're paying for people who don't really contribute to society. Obviously, there are other things, but how frustrating is that? And how do you, because let's face it, we're talking about people who are complaining because they have a lack in their lives or in their communities. How do you deal with that, where people are making those kinds of, they're feeling that, even if the perception may be wrong, that is how things look to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we understand. There's larger forces and larger frustrations that exist in terms of, like we mentioned, the cost of healthcare generally, the inability for folks to be able to purchase insurance, or maybe they're in, you know, higher level of income and don't qualify for Medicaid. And so it seems very unfair that some folks would get HBIA or HBIS. But, you know, like it's difficult because you're comparing apples to oranges. It's a challenge that we have to face. I don't think that anybody can point to a single credible economic study that demonstrates that immigrants actually cost more than what they are able to contribute. And so it's not necessarily based on facts. So we can share all the facts of the world out there, but I actually think that what's the most powerful is stories, is when we're able to share the stories of my mom and dad who got here in 1990, bought a house in 1993, put me through school, and what they've been able to contribute as members of their church, as members of their community, and knowing that they are going to retire without Social Security, without any retirement plans. And, you know, when folks are able to meet one-on-one and hear these stories and put a face to, you know, what can be easily, villainized, I think that that is much more powerful. We need to do reports. We need to show our facts. We need to demonstrate the contributions that we make, and we need to build really strong relationships, both within the community, but also with folks that have the ability to make these decisions, with elected officials, with folks in state government and city government, so that they can understand the contributions that immigrants do make.
Graciela Guzman, especially because of your background as an organizer, I sometimes wonder if there shouldn't be some way where the people who are in the neighborhoods where there's been disinvestment, where health care has been lacking, couldn't be arm in arm with people in the immigrant community saying, you know what, they're right, it's bad here, and make theirs better and give us some too, as opposed to having it seem like there are two different communities fighting over the same crumbs.
I think that sentiment is right on, Craig. I think a lot of folks get fixated on this like very specific piece of the arc for Healthy Illinois. And we actually, like, our North Star and how we redraw is a better healthcare system for all people. And that does include folks that are citizens, many of the folks that you've been talking about that have been historically disenfranchised by lack of healthcare, healthcare inadequacy. You know, we've heard from folks all across our state that talk about healthcare providers that unfortunately have had to close and leave, for example, areas of their life where they're subject to health insurance churn, where a medical emergency that has been caused by leaving a job or making a life change or something like that means that those health decisions are now in extreme peril. And I think there is something about shared solidarity and experience that has to be centered in terms of how we're all collectively pushing towards advancing a healthcare agenda that means we simplify the healthcare system that every single person can have, and that we're starting to address things like the underinsured folks that are uninsured despite every single option that's available here at the state and federal level. And that also means for us, right, we're obviously advancing a line of health insurance coverage for folks that right now don't have any insurance whatsoever, but the larger mission is how we bring parity to all people.
Matt Wilson, I want to ask, in going through all of the findings in your report, was there anything that you found that surprised you?
Oh, a lot of things that surprised me, actually. I think that the one thing that is really tricky methodologically when conducting this type of research is trying to put dollar signs on everything. And we can put a lot of dollar signs in terms of, you know, additional people that find it easier to work and people that aren't going into debt. But it's a lot harder to put dollar signs on things that we know are very valuable, such as, I mean, how do you put a dollar sign on the children of whose parents are who don't have coverage and are sick of them worrying at school and not being able to achieve their most? And then that hurts their lifetime earnings and their educational trajectory. And I think we were able to quantify a lot of things because there is a lot of research around specifically Medicare expansion with the ACA. But there's so many, I think, avenues and important things to research that are more of those indirect benefits that we don't think about as much. So thinking of, you know, the number of people that could become high achieving, you know, important parts of our economy that because they're the children of people who are not who don't have health coverage, you know, that thing becomes really hard to quantify. So I think, you know, what surprised me the most is that we don't have a great idea of some of these indirect impacts that are happening to people. But the ones that we do know that are directly attributable to healthcare expansion, I think, make really compelling cases. I think ones around household finances and the ability to not go into medical debt were really powerful. But I also think, you know, people's ability to, there was a 8 percentage point reduction in people who had absenteeism at work. You know, that's a really powerful one because it's not just, you know, that 8% reduction could also be someone losing their job, right? So I think that there's, it's just from every single angle, there's so many connections between healthcare and other facets of life that become really important.
Well, thank you very much. I think that that is a good way to cap off this discussion. That was Matt Wilson, a researcher with UIC's Great Cities Institute. I also do want to thank Ere Rendon, Vice President for Immigrant Justice with the Resurrection Project, and Graciela Guzman, the organizer with CTU and a community advocate. All three of you, thank you for the discussion. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.